Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up, we're going to talk about movie sequels that you had no idea ever existed. And speaking of movies, we got some movie ratings controversies that we're going to talk about, and some pretty ridiculous flavors of soda from around the world, which, you know, people have very strange taste. But right now, we want to jump into talking about some stuff from CNET. Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET, and we want to talk about some of the stuff that's happening online in the world. And let's talk to Ian Schur. Ian, welcome back.
Hi, how you doing? I don't have any tang for you, sorry.
So you don't?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, tell everybody about yourself, Ian.
Well, you know, we are the world's largest tech news site. We do, we're one of the oldest review sites out there. And I specifically write about the wonderful world of social networking and what my friends jokingly call the downfall of democracy, mm-hmm. and how all this stuff is impacting our lives. Because one of the things I think we all have started to notice is that whether we like it or not, the tech industry has huge impacts on our daily lives, and it's important to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and it is a huge part. You know, as much as people, you know, Ian, being in the business that you're in, you know, people, have opinions about you know using the internet and using social media, but everybody uses it. You fall into it, and it's part of your life.
It is, and what's interesting is that there's so many different types, right? There's YouTube, which is one of the most trafficked websites on the planet. There's studies out there and data that's indicating that it is used by teenagers and young people more than Google to look stuff up.
Is that right?
Right? Like, you've got Facebook, obviously. Instagram is huge. You know, it's incredible how pervasive this stuff is, to the point that, you know, not only has it upended our politics, but it's upended policy, right? One of the most fascinating things I've been seeing is this research that's going on about not only the Russian interference in our elections, but how they actually encourage online debate and both sides of it, so that it becomes such a big deal online that reporters end up covering it because it's got so much noise. And one of the questions that researchers ask is, well, if the Russians hadn't been encouraging both sides of it to make us feel more divided, would we have even ever actually debated it? And that's a really interesting issue.
Yeah, it really is. And it's, you know, it's become, you know, we have a president who tweets all the time now. And so it's, the social media has become a massive part, not only because of the Russian interference in the election and all the other things, but we now have a guy who's in office who, instead of making speeches or instead of taking meetings, he just tweets it all out. And now, obviously, Twitter is a major part of politics.
Well, I think what's interesting is that it's not, you know, he's an example of, you know, one of the people who uses it to an extreme degree. But I have to say that you look at people like AOC and Elizabeth Warren, who's running for president, and a bunch of these other people, you're seeing social media become a central part of all of their campaigns, because it is a much more effective way these days to get in touch with people, particularly young people. And I think that's really fascinating. And even to the point where there's actually more research being done about the boomer generation and how they respond to social media as well. So it's not even young people anymore. It's everybody.
Yeah, absolutely true. All right, well, let's get into some tech talk. Okay, Ian, here we go. Since we're talking about social media, let's talk about the Facebook. There's some mishandled phone numbers, some facial recognition problems. What's going on with Facebook? And they're always in the news with stuff like this.
They are. So, I mean, as early as tomorrow, we're going to see a settlement for $5 billion with the FTC over this Cambridge Analytica scandal, which you may remember.
Yeah.
Tied right back to President Trump, this political consultancy that bought, in a very bad way, they bought tens of millions of people's Facebook profile information and then used that inappropriately to target political ads. And that became a huge scandal. Facebook found out about it years ago, but tried to kind of cover it up. It became a huge scandal. And so now we're seeing a $5 billion settlement, or it's not a settlement, a fine from the FTC around that. There's also a second thing that's going to be announced, possibly, which is a new kind of settlement that the FTC will have found with Facebook around how they handled our phone numbers. So one of the things that they encouraged us to do a long time ago, Facebook encouraged us, was to set up our phones for what's called dual-factor authentication. You may have done this, where they ask you to log in, and then they send a password to your phone number, right? And this is a really good system. It makes sure that your phone, your Facebook account won't get hacked and all this type of stuff.
Right.
But apparently they were using this for advertisers, too. Oh. And advertisers could actually use that information to target ads at you, which, of course, is a forehead slap if you ever saw one. So they're going to get in trouble for that. And then there's all this other stuff. It just feels like, you know, almost everything Facebook does these days somehow runs afoul of our government. And it's really just crazy to watch.
Yeah. It seems like Facebook is in the news every week for something, something not good every week.
I spoke to one researcher, I think, who really put it right. They said, you know, there is a lot of unexploded ordnance around Facebook. There's a lot of bad behavior that they've been doing for years that's starting to catch up with them.
Yeah.
And, the other thing is that they don't think this is over. You know, I think that we're starting to see increasing efforts from the government to come down on a bunch of tech companies after years of letting them basically do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see even Congress at one point might actually get its act together. I would be shocked, too, but they might actually get their act together and decide to do something, too, which will be its own mess. So it's going to be really fascinating.
I'm wondering if Mark Zuckerberg is going to have to leave and go back to his home planet. At some point.
I thought he was a robot, or he was supposed to be a lizard.
He's something. I don't know.
There's so many rumors.
I do want to talk quickly about this. You know how there are obviously social media and internet fads that last about 2 weeks. This face app thing. Which was the hot thing that everybody was doing. And then, of course, everybody discovered that it was like, oh, we can take your identity and we're going to scan you, you know, and it's the Russians made this app and all this other stuff. What was the talk at CNET about FaceApp?
Well, you know, a couple of us, including myself, actually made the face, the older face thing.
A ton of people did it. I know a ton of my friends and people did it. I didn't do it, but a lot of people did.
Yeah, my favorite one was when someone did it on Twitter. There were a lot of smart ones. My favorite one was they showed the Avengers, right? So you had Thor and you had Iron Man, and they did it for the Hulk, right? And then they did it for Paul Rudd, and he looked exactly the same as now.
Right.
That guy just doesn't old age.
Right.
But you know, the thing is that the biggest concern about the app, there were two things. One was that it was built by a Russian developer, and anytime you deal with someone who is in another country like Russia or China, there's a question about whether the security apparatus or the propaganda apparatus is a part of it. And that's a legitimate conversation. You know, I don't know whether it was true in this case, but it should always be something we think about, sadly. Mm. The other thing is that the app by default would ask for access to all of your photos on your phone. And this was a really scary thing. And a lot of people just push yes all the time because they're just used to that. And by doing that, it's possible, it wasn't in this case, but it was possible they could take all of your photos and take them into their systems. And then they say, by the terms of service, which is very normal for a lot of apps, that whatever they have in their systems, they're allowed to use in perpetuity without any worry about licensing or anything else. So there was a possibility if they sucked up all your photos, they could use them for advertising or whatever else. Now, they didn't, and this app was, it seems like, by all accounts, was actually not a bad actor, but it caused this huge concern, and it was a good reminder. I said this to a lot of people. I'm really happy people are having these conversations now and not after some disaster where everyone did it and then learned that all their information was gone. Like, this is the right thing to do, is to be worried, and I know it sounds ridiculous to say it, but you really have to be looking out for yourself. And we've been saying this and seen that for years, and I'm really happy people are actually starting to realize it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, everybody, you know, like I said, for about a 3-day period, all of my friends looked like they were 95 years old on my Facebook.
Except Paul Rudd.
Yes, Paul Rudd, who never ages. Yeah, Paul Rudd looks exactly like he did in Clueless. I don't know how he does it. But you know, when the story then became it was designed by Russians, they could take your pictures, they could do that. Again, there's always, doesn't it seem, Ian, that there's always like, oh, we're having some fun with social media, and we're having some fun with the internet, and there's always something that's going to backslide and be bad. There's always a bad side.
The reality is that we cannot have fun anymore. I mean, this is it. You know, 2019, it's over. I'm declaring it now. There is no more fun on the internet. It just doesn't happen.
All right. Well, look, Ian, hang on, okay? All right. Our good friend Ian Scherer is with us. He is with CNET.com, an editor at large, and we're doing some more tech talk. Check him out on Twitter at Ian Scherer. That's I-A-N-S-H-E-R-R. Ian Scherer from CNET. More tech talk right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about sequels that you didn't even know existed. Insane movie sequels. Where did they come from? We got some movie rating controversy, and we're also going to talk about some ridiculous flavors for pop and soda across the world. But right now we're having some tech talk. Ian Scherer is an editor at large with CNET.com. Check out CNET.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian Scherer. And we got more tech talk to talk about. And here is Ian. Ian, welcome back.
Hi. By the way, Return to Oz is the weirdest sequel I ever saw.
I love that movie. I love Return to Oz. It's Fairuza Balk's first movie too. She played Dorothy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Stuff I didn't know.
She played Dorothy.
It's definitely a weird movie.
There's no question about it. It's a very strange movie. Any Oz movie that opens with Dorothy getting shock treatment is weird. And that's how that movie opens. So
yes, no, I do like the. I mean, it's very like, you know, the Cold War of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Very cynical. Like, oh, you know, she wakes up, she tells everyone, "You were there, you were there,
yeah.
You were there." And then the next minute, they're like, "Okay, into an insane asylum."
Yeah, exactly, exactly right. All right, let's get back to some tech talk here, Ian. The Equifax breach that we all knew about back in 2017. How can people claim their share of the dough? What's going on?
Yeah, so there's a $700 million settlement. And so if you are one of the 147 million people who were affected, you can actually have a claim. And what they're doing, we have instructions on CNET. It's not going to be finalized yet, so you can't make a claim yet, but you can sign up for an email to let you know when you can, is that they are going to have to figure this out with a judge, get approval, and then what you'll be able to do is get a repayment of up to $20,000 for expenses related to unauthorized charges on your accounts, or cost of freezing your credit, or cost of credit monitoring, even stuff like postage and notary and all sorts of other stuff, although that's a lot of notaries for $20,000. It's only $15 in my local UPS. But, you know, the thing is that they're going to have to pay out for everyone's just frustrated lost time. And I think that's really good. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how the judge feels about this. But typically when we get these kind of settlements, most of the money doesn't go anywhere. It goes to the lawyers who brought the class action. And then the rest of it kind of $25 a piece for the people affected. And here, we're starting to actually see money go to the people affected that'll help pay for, like, attorneys and accountants. And some people's lives are turned upside down, and I'm glad to see that Equifax is going to have to pay that.
Wow. And, boy, that's going to be a big dent to Equifax right there, man.
It will. But, you know, I think a lot of people, after seeing how complete – I mean, this is one of those examples where the company did everything wrong. There's no defending them
yeah.
in this situation. And when it comes to that, I think that the punishment needs to fit the crime, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people feel good to see that they're getting punished. And I think there's a fair number of people who would say that it's probably not enough. And I would be really curious to see how that debate forms as the judge is deciding whether or not to accept the settlement.
Yeah. And in the piece that's on CNET.com right now, there are a step-by-step thing about how to prepare your claim and then what will settlement payments are going to cover and things like that. Like, you guys go into detail and step-by-step stuff to help people out.
Yeah, and the most important thing is we have a link to the FTC's email update system so that if you think you have a claim, you can sign up now and get notified when the judge, if the judge approves this settlement.
Yeah, and there's also, you provide a phone number that you can call for where you can get updates as well if you want to go that way. And that's 833-759-2982, 833-759-2982 if you think you've been affected by the Equifax breach. So there you go. Another big story in the news here. All right. So let's talk about this. How is this possible? Ian, you wrote this piece on CNET. How is it possible that one in three Americans think they have 5G?
Well, I think what's really crazy is that almost none of them have it.
Yeah.
And they all think they do.
Yeah.
And I'm blown away by that. I mean, this is why I wrote the piece. I just could not believe it. So, you know, part of what's going on here is that this is the impact of advertising, right? So, you know, what happened was that Declutter, which, by the way, is a company that will refurbish phones and sell them again, surveyed 2,000 U.S. smartphone owners in May. So this is before most of the 5G networks were even turning on for testing. And they found that about a third of people who responded believed they had a device capable of 5G connections. And here's my favorite part of the data. 40% of the people who said they think they have a 5G device were iPhone owners. Apple has not yet released a 5G iPhone. And so it's unbelievable. And a lot of this is because if you have an AT&T phone right now, like I do, and you look at the phone, you're going to see in the top right this thing that says 5GE. And believe it or not, that's not 5G. It's actually 4G with a little extra added to it.
I see.
AT&T is selling that as 5G. They've been sued over it. They actually came to a settlement with Sprint over it because Sprint said that they were basically lying. And they came to some sort of a settlement, but that settlement did not include taking the 5GE off my phone. And so everyone is criticizing AT&T less than life because it's caused all of this confusion.
Yeah. Wow. How much?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Ian, when you're doing this, how much do you think Americans should get to know about their technology? Should they be more educated?
You know,
do you think people should be more educated about what they have?
Well, I mean, as someone who loves to be the guy who teaches everyone everything, obviously I love when people learn more, right?
Yeah.
But also, this needs to be fair game, right? Like, part of my job is to explain things to people. And, you know, when you're the world's largest tech news site, your job is you have to be able to talk to normal people. And I think part of the problem here is that AT&T, like, I knew when I saw 5GE, I slapped my forehead, I kind of groaned, and I said, gosh, I can't believe they're doing this. But a lot of people, including in this survey, did not think that. They said, ooh, I got an upgrade. And I think that the thing is that it's just not fair when companies are not treating people well, right? When they're not thinking of the best interests of the people who don't know about this stuff.
Yeah.
And those are the people who are the most important to be careful about because they can get burned bad, and that's really not okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is I'm clearly not very tech savvy. I know enough to get by, but I wish I knew more just because it's become, you know, so important and kind of dangerous to be ignorant of this kind of technology because you're liable to be swindled, you're liable to be the victim of something terrible if that happens.
Yeah, but the way I think about this is that I look at it in the same way that I think of cars, right? Most people don't know how a drivetrain works, and they don't really want to learn how it works. They
know
it's important because it gets them from A to B every day. But when it comes to the mechanic, they're like, gosh, I don't know if I can trust my mechanic. I should learn more about this, but I'm not gonna. And they just get frustrated. I think technology is very similar for a lot of people. So we have to approach this as making sure that the people who know stuff like you and me are really putting pressure on the companies and on the government to make sure that they are doing the right by everybody. Because yeah. it can't just be on every individual person. Well, if you didn't understand what 5GE was, you're a dummy. Yeah. That's not fair. That's not nice to people. And it's assuming that they have too much time. People have more things and more important things to do in their lives, like, you know, watching the sequel to Oz. So, you know, that's really like that's the way I think about this stuff all yeah. the time.
Well, you know, that's a really great analogy that you made about it's like driving. It's like a car. I mean, you know, like for those of us who have driven cars and owned cars, I know nothing about how to fix a car. If something goes wrong, I take it right to the mechanic. And I think that's the way, you know, that's a great analogy that you make about this technology, about the phones, about the computers, about the laptops and stuff like that, that we don't know really how it works. Just take it to an expert and have them deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that unlike the car world, which I'm not criticizing, but I will point out, there's a lot of websites devoted to helping you understand technology.
Yeah.
And I feel like in a way that we try to deconstruct it in a way that is much easier than it is to deal with cars. And I really feel good about that, right?
Yeah.
And we also are really willing to call out these companies when they screw up. Like, you know, you look at all the blunders Samsung has had over the years with the Note 7 that blew up and then the Fold phone that they came out with in April that literally had the screen breaking in reviewers' hands, and they were about to sell it to people later that week for $2,000. And those types of things, just like seeing the industry get pushback from the reviewers and from the news reporters who are trying to keep an eye in the interest of the readers, I think is really good. It's healthy and it's helpful.
Yeah. Okay, great. Ian, hang on. And when we come back, Ian, we got to talk about your summer TV buyer's guide, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, Ian, hang on. Ian Schur is with us. He joins us usually about once a month for some tech talk. He is with CNET.com, editor-at-large. Check out CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ian Schur. That's I-A-N. S-H-E-R-R. Ian Schur from CNET, more tech talk, and we're going to tell you how to give you a guide on buying TVs for this summer. That's coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get those requests in. We'll play them later. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And, of course, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay. Joining us right now is Ian Schur, editor-at-large for CNET.com. And we love to talk tech with Ian. Let's get back to the conversation. Ian, welcome back.
Hey, how are you doing?
All right. Okay. CNET has published the How to Buy a TV Summer 2019 update, and this is pretty thorough right here. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so the big thing that, and I love, by the way, our TV team. They are the most awesome people, and they break this stuff down. Talk about an industry that's hard to understand. I'm like, big screen, give me that. And they explain all the stuff that you need to know. So first off, the most important thing to know right now is that this is actually a pretty bad time to buy a TV.
Mm.
It turns out that this is when the cost of TVs is relatively high. So the times when they refresh the TVs, right, they get rid of the old ones, they get the new ones, is usually around March or April, because that's just when the Super Bowl is over, they're clearing out all the old stuff,
sure,
putting in the new.
Yeah, yeah.
So it turns out that the best time to buy a TV typically is around Black Friday, duh, and yeah, around the Super Bowl, especially right after, because then they're clearing them all out.
Wow,
so
that's...
if you're going to buy a TV,
yeah,
if you have to, what they recommend is that you make sure you actually find one of 2018's TVs, because those are like $300 cheaper right now than the 2019 TVs. They have almost all the same features, and the differences are really minor. The other thing which they said is that, you know, unless you're looking for something like Roku or specific things like that, do not get caught up in all these special extras that they try to pile on the TV. The biggest things you need to know about buying a TV is that bigger is always better. And this is true. Most people that we talk to say that the number one thing that they're frustrated with when they get home and get the TV set up is they feel like they got one that was too small. So always get 40 inches or bigger for a TV. for your bedroom and at least 55 inches for your living room or main TV. 65 inches or better, larger is even better.
Wow.
And the other thing is, there are three letters to always keep in mind. HDR. It's a new, it's a technology called Ultra. It's high dynamic range. It makes sure that the blacks are blacker, the colors are more saturated, and it just looks beautiful. And a lot of the new stuff coming out supports it, including Netflix. The other thing is 4K. It's at this point where it's worth getting,
yeah,
even though you may not be using it very much. A lot of the stuff coming out in the next 10 years is going to really start pushing 4K, including the video game consoles from Microsoft and from Sony that are coming out next year. They are going to be 4K as well. So everything's starting to move in that direction. And, you know, if you're going to buy one, you should.
Okay. And by the way, I do want to mention again one more time, your TV people did a fantastic job with this article because there's so many details. I mean, they go into voice control. They go into remote controls. They do the smart TV, the Roku TV, which I have a Roku TV at home. And the picture, the quality of the picture, and it goes through all of that and answers all of your frequently asked questions, your FAQs. It's a really terrific piece that people should check out on CNET.com. And if you're looking to buy a TV this summer, you really, really, really need to check out this article because it goes into great detail. Very good job.
And I'll tell you, I saw the advertising for Quantum Dots when I first heard about these new TVs that were coming out. And I slapped my forehead. I'm like, what the heck is a quantum dot?
Yeah.
I just understood what OLED was. And so they do an amazing job explaining all of this terrible marketing gimmickry and really explaining in English. So it's worth reading through that.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, I mean, it can be intimidating when you're going to buy a big appliance. You know what I mean? When you make any kind of big purchase in any field, but especially in technology or TV or anything like that, it can be really confusing. So the more you know, the better off you're going to be. So check that out.
All right.
Let's move on to there was a piece that was written on CNET there about AdBlock Plus. Let's talk a little bit about the details of that.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things, you may not have heard of this thing before. One of your nerdy friends may have installed it on your computer at some point. What it is it's a program you can download, and what it'll do is it'll run in the background, and it'll remove a lot of the tracking advertising that you run across on the internet by default. And the whole idea behind it is that this company that created it really wanted to fight back against basically what Facebook does for a living. And it's a really interesting idea, right? There's a lot of, and they've caused a lot of debate within the industry. And by industry, I mean within the tech industry and also within media, because people like me, for example, my salary is funded through advertising, as it is for a lot of people. And so there's a concern that will these apps possibly hurt the future of media? And I think what's really interesting is that it's causing this conversation throughout the tech industry. Well, how should it be used? When is the right time to use it? You know, this pressure from Apple and from Microsoft to encourage a lot more privacy on the internet is really interesting to watch. And they're actually building AdBlock's technology into a lot of browsers now. So we're starting to see increasing efforts to kind of roll back the privacy stuff and the tracking that's happening online, but it's being done in this very interesting way that's causing a lot of friction and causing a lot of debate. So it's really interesting to read about and figure out.
Yeah, AdBlock Plus. I was not aware of this, but it is an option in some. It's built in some browsers and that's improving, correct?
Yes, and not only that, it's being either built into some browsers or it's something that you can install on your browser. And you can actually, for the one of the best features of it is that you can create what's called a whitelist, right? Sites that you're okay with them showing ads to you because you want them to be able to be supported. So obviously you would put CNET and WGN on there, and then there are a couple others that you would add as well. But it's one of the ways to show that, you know, look, I understand that these websites still need to make money. I just don't want to be tracked as heavily as I have been.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting to see people push back in that way.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes it's really annoying. I mean, there are more webs, some websites more than others. Some websites that you go to, it's just ad after ad after ad. They pop up. They're in the corner. They're in the. It's sometimes it's absolutely annoying.
Yeah, and I think even the browser makers realize that, which is why we're starting to see just all of this aggressive pushback. I mean, Apple has been pushing so hard. It's part of their advertising now. They really are starting to make themselves into this company that really values your privacy. And, you know, you can debate Apple all you want, but it's really interesting to see that they think they can get real leverage out of this and that they can make a name for themselves as being a place for privacy.
Yeah. I love that it's anti-advertising in their advertising.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's pretty great. So, yeah. But anyway, if you want all the details about AdBlock Plus, again, another piece that's on CNET.com. All right, let's talk about this. New York privacy bill could ban selling phone location data. This is an interesting story right here.
Yeah, so part of what's happened here is that there was this amazing story that came out a few months ago where it turned out that the location data of people was being sold to various people. And we're talking about, like, for example, people who are trying to track down people because they owe them debts or stuff like that. And it was really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Originally, the idea of selling this location data was, for example, if I'm Sears, and or let's not use Sears because they're almost gone, but maybe if I'm Old Navy, right? And I have a ad that I want to send to people that are nearby my store. I'm going to have 15% off for the next 20 minutes. I could ask AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile for the location data of everyone who's one of my customers, who's within a certain radius of every one of my stores, and then send them all a text message if they already had said, I want updates from Old Navy. And somebody would send them out, and it would tell you I have a sale, and you would all come in and spend money with me. It would be really cool. The problem is that that's not how the system was used. There were a lot of people who used it to do really kind of very questionably uncomfortable things, violating a lot of people's privacy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now we have New York saying, okay, not cool. We're going to write a law that says you cannot just sell this location data at all. The proposed bill includes a $1,000 fine per violation and a maximum threat penalty of $10,000 per day, per person, for location data shared against the law.
Wow.
So they really want to make sure that this doesn't happen.
And if it's passed, it's going to take 120 days for the bill to become a law, correct?
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's not that uncommon because a lot of times they want to make sure that they're allowing for existing systems to be changed and all that stuff. And, you know, it's normal to see that stuff. It's very rare for a law to suddenly kick in unless it's like funding something in the government.
Right.
So I'm not surprised by that. But New York and California are really becoming the front leading edge of these privacy bills that we're seeing everywhere. You may remember San Francisco passed a law recently that said that the police are not allowed to use facial recognition software without an explicit court order.
Right.
You've got all these other pressures. New York has another law where they're actually going to try and ban. It's not just New York. Sorry, it's Congress is going to try and ban facial recognition use in government buildings as a way to get in and out when it comes to normal public, right? So imagine like HUD buildings and kind of public housing and stuff like that. So it's really fascinating to see this pressure coming in and to see how this all plays out, because eventually wherever this stuff ends up, all the rest of the states will likely do it too. So, and Illinois, by the way, also has a really interesting, you know, they have a law where you can't do facial recognition without the permission of the person who's being facially recognized. So, for example, a lot of video cameras that have facial recognition in them can't be used in Illinois because they don't have the permission of the person who might be caught on.
Ah, sure. Now, that's great. It's interesting. All right, we'll keep an eye on that. All right, Ian, always a pleasure.
Always, absolutely.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Everybody should check you out. Follow you on Twitter at Ian Scherr. That's IanSHERR. And you can always check them out at CNET.com. We'll do more Tech Talk again soon, Ian. Thanks, and have a great day.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay, there you go. Ian Scherr, everybody, from CNET.com. We'll talk to him again next month for more Tech Talk. All right, we'll take a quick break here for the news on 720 WGN.